The COVID relief bill, still in limbo. How Americans are trying being the key word here, to take care of their mental health. And we've got a puzzle. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Rima Khreis, in for Kaya Rizdal. It is Friday, the 25th of December. Good to have y'all along, and Merry Christmas to everyone celebrating. So what a week it has been. Feels like a lot happened, yet not much at all. Congress did pass a $900 billion COVID relief bill on Monday. We just don't know when or if President Trump will sign it. So we're going to dig into all of that. And here to do it with me is Sudeep Reddy from Politico and Catherine Rompel from The Washington Post. Hey, you two.
Hey.
Hey, Rima.
So, Catherine, I want to start with you. Yesterday, I saw this tweet that I think really encapsulates what's going on here. And it basically said, so often when we talk about what's happening in Congress or the White House, it's easy to talk about it like it's a TV drama, right? Or in this case, it feels like a bit of a Christmas showdown. But I think it's really important here to keep in mind the stakes, right? The stakes are really high. Can you remind us, I mean, what does this really, this dysfunction mean for people, for Americans, the longer this bill is held up?
It means people will be hungry. People will be evicted. People may go into bankruptcy. They may go into foreclosure. There are 14 million people who are estimated to lose their unemployment benefits alone, effectively tomorrow, the day after Christmas, if, in fact, this bill isn't signed. Another 30 million Americans who are protected by an eviction moratorium will no longer have that protection at the end of the month. So this has real consequences, right? This is not just about, one-upsmanship or a political game. People's lives are on the line. They need the food aid. They need the unemployment assistance. They need the rental assistance that is part of this bill, not to mention the many small businesses, of course, that are teetering on the edge that could also use the $300 billion in small business loans that is wrapped up in this bill as well.
Yeah, we're actually going to get into that a little bit later in the show. Also, there was a great article in The Washington Post from your colleagues this week about how y'all have just been flooded with messages and calls from people who, as you said, are about to lose their homes or going hungry. And it felt like the general sentiment there was, you know, how can people in Congress, the president, how can they celebrate Christmas when, as you said, 14 million Americans are slated to lose unemployment aid tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, it's really a stark contrast. And look, Congress came to an agreement. It took a long time. It took many months for them to hammer out a deal. It's not a perfect deal, but it's one that's necessary. And then, of course, Trump seems to have blown that up. Hopefully not irreparably.
Yeah, and Sudeep, I want you to talk a little bit about that politics. So there's been a lot of back and forth this week. Can you give us a recap and give us a sense of what could possibly happen now?
Yeah, this is a very weird situation where the president and his team negotiated an aid package really just a week ago and came to an agreement with Democratic leaders in Congress, Republicans, Democrats, actually coming together and willing to give up some of their preferred policies and got something done. And as Catherine said, nothing here is perfect, but it is something that is absolutely believed to be necessary by people across the political spectrum. This was overwhelmingly accepted in Congress. You rarely see votes like this that are so lopsided. And then for the president to come out and say, no, I want more, after he had already really stood on the sidelines during a lot of the discussion. He could have pushed for more. He could have made this happen. But it takes a lot to get something through Congress. It takes a lot to get Congress together when you've got so many lawmakers spread across the country who need to travel back in. I find it hard to believe the president will actually veto this one and let the government shut down on Monday. We're just a few weeks away from the end of his term. Does he really want a government shutdown on his hands? But it's just also hard to believe that the president is protesting decisions that he himself made just 1 week ago. He can push for this and then he can keep pushing for more. And he can actually get his party to do more if he wanted to, but he just hasn't weighed in. And coming in after the fact, it's bizarre politics, let alone bizarre policy.
Right, right. And so, yeah, as you all have said, quick spark notes recap here. A bunch of unemployment benefits expire tomorrow. Government funding expires Monday. And as of now, there's no real plan to keep the government open. But Sudeep, you don't think it'll lead to government shutdown?
Well, it seems like the president is going to have to accept what we've got here and let this move forward. All people want is for this virus to be under control. There are so many millions of people who, out of no fault of their own, they're struggling. Hotel workers, airline workers, restaurant workers, millions and millions of more from other industries, and they just want a stopgap. They just want to get through the next few months. We have hope on the other side. We've got vaccines rolling out. We can see the end of this, and you just need to get over this final hump. And it's not as heavy of a lift as it seemed 9 months ago to get to the other side. And we just need to push through to that end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to fast forward a little to next year and President-elect Biden. Catherine, he is going to be inheriting a really fragile economy. What is the first thing you think he will do about it?
Well, he's mentioned a number of priorities on the economy, but I think there's sort of an intermediate step that will be the main overarching priority, which is getting the virus under control. Because as long as the virus is spreading unabated, of course, it is in control of the economy. It doesn't matter, how many loans you give to small businesses. If people can't safely patronize those small businesses, you know, that doesn't solve the problem. So my guess would be that their top priority would be things like vaccine distribution, which is a logistical nightmare, I think, to some degree. It's the largest effort we've seen in modern history on that front. And any other kinds of measures that are, again, first order public health measures, but second order would help the economy.
Mm-hmm. We have like 30 seconds here. Sudeep, anything you want to add?
Yeah, obviously the near-term issue is getting that virus under control. But after that, there are so many pent-up problems that we've seen from as a result of the virus. The people who are stuck behind on payments on their home, on their mortgages, the businesses that are about to go under, and will still have just enormous challenges after that. So it's really the second 6 months of next year that are going to have really consequential decisions to actually get the economy back to where it was, rather than just keeping it from collapsing even further.
Mm-hmm. Sudeep Reddy from Politico and Catherine Rumpel from The Washington Post. Thanks, you too. Hope you have a good holiday weekend.
Thanks,
Merry
Rima.
Christmas.
You too.
A quick reminder, David Brancaccio and the Morning Report team bring you the economic context you need to start your day, including the latest on the COVID relief package. Be sure to give that a listen on Monday morning. The markets were closed for the holidays, so we'll give Wall Street a break today. Instead, later in the show, a special holiday edition of The Numbers. As we mentioned in my conversation with Catherine and Sudeep, it has been a tough year for business. No surprise, that includes the travel industry. Last year, more than 2.5 million people flew on Christmas Eve. That's according to the TSA. Meanwhile, yesterday, about 850,000 people flew, even with the CDC urging us to stay home. Despite how many people are traveling, though, the industry, hotels, airlines, and the like, they are still struggling. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
Darby Megan was on the road first thing today on his way to visit family.
Good morning, Mitchell. We are in Sheridan, Wyoming right now, on our way from Spokane, Washington to Crystal Beach, Texas.
He's one of 84 million Americans that AAA estimates are traveling during the holidays this year.
2,200 and something miles. Yeah, it's a little bit of a hike. I'm not driving. My wife is, thankfully.
So they're being safe behind the wheel, and they're trying to be safe about COVID-19 exposure. Megan says they quarantined for several weeks before hitting the road on Christmas Eve.
We discussed Airbnbs, hotels, and we decided we're going to sleep in the van on the ground to try to isolate from people as much as possible and just, you know, gas station for the bathroom.
He says they debated whether to even make the trip at all and potentially put elderly relatives at risk.
The CDC guidelines and what's going on, there is this level of guilt. We do realize that we could infect somebody by traveling.
And a lot of Americans have taken public health warnings about travel to heart. AAA predicts holiday travel will be down 30% compared to last year. Air travel's down by more than half. Here's Andrew Gross from AAA.
Anybody goes anywhere at all, it will be by car for the most part, and it will probably be shorter distances and to family. The big warm weather beach vacation trips are probably going to be put off. You know, that beach is still going to be there next year.
But your favorite beach hotel or resort might not be there. Chip Rogers is president of the American Hotel and Lodging Association. He says many hotels are in danger of foreclosure right now. And hotel industry workers?
We're looking at a permanent reduction of around 25% of the workforce that we had starting 2020. With no assistance or no dramatic change in the marketplace, between now and the spring, you could lose another 25%.
And by change in the marketplace, he means people feeling safe enough to stay in hotels again when they travel once the threat of COVID-19 has diminished. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Whatever your plans are this holiday, whether you're on the road or, like me, staying put, I hope you're taking some time off. In many workplaces, the end of the year, it can be stressful. And this year, well, you know. From our Workplace Culture Desk, Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino has more.
Jim Mathis runs a small ad agency in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and he'd normally have a full calendar during the holidays, the company party, visits to extended family, and preparing for a New Year staff retreat. 2020, though, is 2020.
Just this lingering cloud over everyone that, it's just getting hard on folks, you know?
He's encouraged his 7 employees to take extra time off this week and next. They have unlimited vacation.
Definitely recharge your batteries. You know, we all need to do that. And this year that's been stressful, we probably need it more than normal.
But how can employers know when workers need to take time off? Sheila Ryan is the chief people officer at Clear Capital Appraisal Services in Truckee, California. She's trained managers to identify potential signs of burnout among their 600 employees.
You look for changes in behavior. Were they really participatory and vocal in your meetings and now they're being more quiet? Are they getting more slouchy and turning their camera off a lot more?
Ryan says more people at her company have taken time off this holiday season than usual. But pulling our brains out of work is easier said than done these days, says Jacqueline Jensen, who teaches organizational psychology at DePaul University.
Your home and your office may be one and the same. And so your mind is always at work, even if you are not actually sitting in front of your computer working.
She says finding a new routine during your time off can help rebuild those boundaries. Spending time outside, reading, or scheduling those things you don't have time for during a busy work week. And by all means, stay away from email.
Several days ago, in anticipation of the holiday, I did take my email off of my phone, and it is freeing.
She might even leave it that way after the holidays are over. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
Wow, should I take my email off my phone? By the way, on the topic of mental health, I want to give a little shout out to a Marketplace podcast that I host called This is Uncomfortable. May have heard of it. On our most recent episode, we looked at our obsession with productivity and how the urge to optimize everything we do can lead to burnout. You can check out that episode of This is Uncomfortable and many more episodes wherever you get your podcasts. Coming up,
they mostly put the stickers on crooked.
I don't see a problem with that. But first, let's do the numbers. Markets are closed today for the Christmas holiday, but we've got some other numbers for you. This year, among many, many other topics, we've focused a lot on food and baking at home. And around this time, you could say baking conjures visions of sugar plums, or at the very least, sugar. The U.S. Department of Agriculture tracks retail prices for refined sugar, and those prices, they've consistently hovered above 60 cents a pound so far this year. Last year, highest monthly prices were 59 cents a pound. How have charities been faring given the pandemic and its hit on the economy? The Chronicle of Philanthropy crunched some numbers and found that from January through June of this year, more than 100 of the largest charities saw a 22% year-over-year increase in donations. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Rima Khreis. So we as American consumers, love a good online deal. Personally, I just snagged some kitchenware for half off, not to brag. But this year, more so than in the past, authorities are warning folks to be careful of online fraud. One area they've especially seen a spike is with fake luxury products, also known as designer dupes, usually sold through social media. Here's the BBC's Laura Hyten-Jins.
Be it groceries, beauty products, or clothes, millions of us are now avoiding big shopping malls and buying stuff online. But if you're hunting for something expensive like a designer handbag, you may not get what you expected. And that's because there appears to be a growing number of clone websites selling fake designer goods for a fraction of the price. I'm browsing a website now that's selling a branded scarf for $19 and a purse for $15. On a little more digging, it's part of a network of fake fashion websites. This is something brands like Louis Vuitton have been fighting for years.
We certainly did see a change in this recent crisis. We saw a lot of miraculous medicine and fake vaccines being offered, but we also saw products linked to our own product. So, for instance, you would get free masks when you order a fake bag.
Leo Longauer oversees anti-counterfeiting at Louis Vuitton Moët Hennessy.
Overall, what can be said is that this crisis has accelerated the digital transformation, and we saw more and more people buy online. This included also less experienced people, and these people are even more vulnerable to some of the tricks that the counterfeiters are applying.
Many people buy counterfeit goods unknowingly, but for others, they might be a choice. Most countries outlaw the sale and trafficking of fake goods, but when it comes to the internet, the lines become blurred, including whether it's illegal to buy such products.
Counterfeiting is unfortunately often viewed as a so-called victimless crime.
Ayala Deutsch is the president of the International Trademark Association.
Counterfeiting is a criminal enterprise. It often involves criminal networks and other criminal activity, whether it's bribery, money laundering, child labor. And I think that it's not at all a victimless crime, and it's not one bag.
That message doesn't seem to be getting through, especially among younger people who can't afford paying full price for luxury items, but feel the need to impress their peers online.
Today I am going to be doing a designer dupe haul for you guys. I love all things designer, but sometimes the price tag is just too high.
I was like, no, don't worry, it's not real Gucci. Like, so many people thought it was real.
If you do want that Chanel look, then this is a great quality dupe.
Here in the UK, law enforcement is fighting an uphill battle against fraudsters. Despite their best efforts, it appears the counterfeiters are winning the fight because these designer fakes are becoming so ubiquitous they've generated a fashion trend of their own. In London, I'm the BBC's Laura Hyten-Jins for Marketplace.
That 5,000-page COVID relief bill that's still in limbo, it includes some much-needed help for small businesses. Because we know this year, it has been absolutely devastating for many of them. Tens of thousands of small businesses have already shut down, at least temporarily. But for some, the strange, unique events of 2020 have actually had the opposite effect. They've helped boost sales. From WAMU in Washington, D.C., Michaela Lefrak has this story.
Matthew Goines' house in Northwest D.C. is absolutely full of cardboard boxes.
Which is cool because the boxes turned into a castle for my kids. Part of it becomes a diving board for them to jump onto the sofa.
His wife, Marnell, has a different attitude about it.
He likes chaos, and I like peace and quiet. I'm just trying to do laundry.
Their home serves as the headquarters of Puzzle Huddle, a children's puzzle company they founded in 2018. The puzzles feature illustrations of Black and brown people doing prestigious jobs. There's one with a doctor in a hijab and another of a little girl in the Oval Office. As a Black parent, Matthew Goins says he got the idea a few years ago while toy shopping for his three kids.
When I looked across that collection, it started to become very obvious to me that there was very little diversity.
What he saw, he says, was a lot of white princesses. So he started making puzzles himself, first by printing out images and gluing them on cardboard. When he and his wife decided to start a business, they hired illustrators and found a manufacturer in China. The puzzles sell for $12 to about $25. The Goinses still pack and ship everything themselves out of their home, even as the business takes off. Their kids, now 7, 5, and 3, insist on helping.
They mostly put the stickers on crooked, and that's their contribution. Them helping is actually makes the work significantly less efficient. It's really adorable.
The COVID-19 pandemic has created a booming market for children's toys. More parents are working from home, and they need ways to entertain their young kids without screens. Then racial justice protests broke out across the country in the wake of the police killings of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and many more.
Then there was just these really big calls for buying Black and supporting Black businesses. And so in the spring, we actually sold out of products.
The sudden interest made it hard for many Black-owned small businesses to keep up with demand. Shops selling items created by Black entrepreneurs, like Nubian Human in Washington, D.C., were inundated with orders. Anika Hobbs owns the boutique.
We don't always necessarily have the infrastructure to scale. A lot of us are learning this from scratch. We don't have parents that own businesses. I just don't think a lot of people understood that.
But as long as customers can be patient, she's excited to have their business. Hobbs's store has sold Puzzle Huddle products for 2 years. She put in another big order earlier this month and says her customers see it as a unique product.
They don't find that anywhere else. You know, they don't find a group of puzzles that look like their children, you know, that can teach them and inspire them.
Last month, Puzzle Huddle hit the small business jackpot. It got a call out of the blue saying Oprah would be featuring the company on her annual favorite things list. Essence Magazine and the New York Times also included Puzzle Huddle on their holiday gift guides. Over the past year, the company's orders have gone from 100 a day to more than 800 a day. A mail truck now stops by the house to pick up dozens of outgoing packages every day, including during our Zoom interview.
Uh-oh, the mail carrier's here. Let me just scream down in the basement real fast, and I'll be right back. 1 second.
Despite all the success, running a small business is still a financial risk. Matthew works on the business full-time, and the family relies on Marnell's income as a university dean. But she says they're finally getting to a place where they can start making more investments in the business.
We're sitting around a dining room table, and I'm surrounded by boxes, and I'm like, all right, you know? In 2021, a warehouse is going to be something that has to be part of the discussion.
For now, the Goinses are packaging up holiday orders in the living room while their kids do puzzles at their feet. In Washington, D.C., I'm Michaela Lafrak for Marketplace.
And this final note on the way out. Megan talked earlier about how to unwind during this holiday season. And, you know, today is Christmas, and usually that's a big day for movie theaters. Last year, Star Wars: The Rise of Skywalker, which was the top grossing film, brought in $32 million. Safe to say we will not reach anywhere close to those kind of numbers this year. But I wanted to share an article I spotted in Rotten Tomatoes where they ranked the best 10 movies ever released on Christmas Day, according to them. Gonna spare you the whole list, but the top three, we've got The Sting, Catch Me If You Can, and Django Unchained. I've only watched one of those three, so guess I know what I'm doing this weekend. All right, that is all for today. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fregali. Nancy Cassett is the managing director of news. And I'm Rima Chreis. All right, have a good holiday weekend, everyone, and stay safe. We will see you on Monday. This is APM.